You know, it's a real joy tonight to welcome back our dear brother, Dr. Bill Woods, to our prayer meeting. Other nights when he's spoken here, my soul has been blessed and been encouraged how the Lord has used him in the work. And we're delighted that he was able to come tonight and speak to us. I'm just going to ask our brother Bill to come and speak to us now, please.
Thank you very much indeed. I want to read a few verses that, in fact, were read on Sunday evening by Dr. Paisley in Acts chapter 27. And we'll read from verse 20. "And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest lay on us all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. But after long abstinence, Paul stood forth in the midst of them and said, Sirs, you should have hearkened unto me, and not have loosed from Crete, and to have gained this harm and loss. But now I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. For there stood by me this night the angel of the Lord of God, whose I am and whom I serve, saying, Fear not, Paul, for thou must be brought before Caesar, and lo, God hath given thee all them that seal with thee. And may the Lord bless his reading to our hearts. First of all, this evening I must thank this church for your prayers and your interest and your support. When I think of the Martyrs Memorial Church, I think of the words that Paul wrote to the Philippians in first chapter and verse 3, when he said, I thank my God of every remembrance of you for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now. And then later on in that chapter in verse 12, he said, these things have taken place for the furtherance of the gospel. And I think of the fellowship of the people of this church. It has been over the many years a very precious fellowship. It has been a very practical fellowship of you supported and given and helped and encouraged. And it has been a prayerful fellowship. It's now 51 years since I left Northern Ireland and went into Bible training for full-time service. And I think of the fellowship and the prayers and the support over these 51 long years that have come from this church. It's now 30 years since I returned to the Acre state of Brazil to take up the leadership of the leprosy program in that state. And I thank God for the fellowship, precious memories, precious support, precious prayers that have helped us to do something to further the gospel in that area. I thank you for your prayers for me in recent days. I returned to Brazil and I had other scans and other tests, and they still haven't been able to find out why one part of one of my lungs is not working. But I'm on treatment, and in the end of January I'll have those tests repeated and we'll see how things work out. But for some time now I have been praying that the Lord would send a substitute to take over the work that I have been doing there in the government's hospitals and in the government's offices. And the Lord did answer that prayer. And first of all, he sent a physiotherapist called Fran. And she does all the book work and goes to all the meetings and takes out all the data that the government and figures, the numbers and all these sort of things from the computer on how the patients are being treated and how many are controlled and all this sort of thing. But I needed someone to take over the clinical work, attend patients, and also to do surgery and all this sort of thing. And a young man who's had 5 years clinical experience came along. He's studying to be a skin specialist, to be a dermatologist. And he's been working with me now this year and will be working the best part of next year as well while he finishes his training. Before I came home one day, he came into my office, before I came home the last time. He said, I want to talk to you. Close the door. He sat down and he said, my life's in a mess. I have so many problems. I need somebody to confide in, somebody to help me. And he told me all his problems, unloaded his burdens, and told me all the things that were happening in his life and the opportunity to counsel him. Now, I don't find it easy to speak to people personally about the things of God. Some people don't think that's strange, but some people it just flows out of them. They have no problem with talk. But I did have the opportunity that day of talking to him. He told me he was attending a Baptist church. I said, it's not enough to attend a church. It's not enough to believe that God gave his son to save us. We have to receive. I returned now in September to Brazil. And I arrived on one day. The next day, several of us traveled an hour by plane, jet plane, over to the other side of the state, where we were going to hold some special campaigns. And Dr. Franco went with me, and indeed we shared a room in the hotel. And there we had opportunity to talk, and he told me that during my absence he'd come to know the Lord as Savior, and had even been baptized. So we're grateful that the Lord has provided him to carry on the work. I received an email from him yesterday, and he said, I'm trying hard to finish my training and learn to attend the patients and operate as you have done for many years. I went back immediately because in September, at the end of September, and sometimes even before the end of September, the rains start in our area, and that means the roads close. And there were several places that we had to visit, and we had promised to go and have special campaigns to see if we could find people still there with leprosy. And indeed, we got over there. There were two other doctors, myself, and two nurses and two auxiliary nurses. And we would leave early morning, about 7:15, in two pickups and go out into these different little villages. And the people were waiting. They had been advised that we were coming. There was no health clinic, so we used the school to attend. The classrooms were our consulting room, and I would put several desks together, and I used that as an operating table to take off skin cancers and do biopsies and all other sorts of things. We attended an average of 600 people a day between us. And I had the opportunity of giving out hundreds of gospel tracts and hundreds of every home crusade gospels of John. Not one was refused. When you give one to somebody, the next person came in and said, I want one of those books as well. So we pray that God's word will bring forth fruit. But in one of those little communities on the side of the river, the director of the school called me outside. And she said, you see those houses on the other side of the river? And there were houses, homes, and things on both sides of the river. She said, you see the second house from the end? She said, that's our church. There are a number of us here who are Christians. So we got together and we built that little house so that we can hold our meetings, so that we can study God's word on those Sunday, and so we can preach the gospel, and during the week we meet there to pray. And she said, it has a lovely roof. And it was you people who put the roof on that little church. It was a gift from the martyrs that put the roof on that little church, away there in the heart of the jungle, in the river Juruá. And she said, you remember my son? I said, yes. He had a terrible time on treatment for leprosy. He had a very difficult time. He had many complications. I thought we'd never get him clear. But finally he was cured. He was left with no deformity. She said, he came to the Lord in that little house. And we sent him to Bible school. He went through Bible school, and today he's preaching the gospel full time. So we're glad that even from here, the gospel is still being preached at the side of the river there in the interior of the Acre State. We did that for 2 weeks. And then another team came. The first team went back to Rio Branco. The other team was an orthopedic surgeon, a wonderful woman, Dr. Roberta, and two nurses. One of the nurses had worked with me and I for almost 30 years. But both of the nurses were Christians. And so we had many opportunities as we operated the patients there to talk to Dr. Roberta about the things of the Lord and the way of salvation. And we're hoping that one day there'll be a breakthrough in that family and that she and her family will come to know the Lord. We weren't operating to cure deformity set in by leprosy, but rather we were operating to prevent deformity taking place in people who didn't respond very well to the medication. After that, I came back to Rio Branco. We've been working on a cure for an untreatable, incurable skin disease that only exists in the tropics, and we discovered that the leprosy for medicine cures this disease, but we have to prove it. Otherwise, the World Health Organization won't let us use the leprosy medication anymore. So a team from the south of Brazil come constantly every 6 months or so to Rio Branco. They're researchers, and they come and they take all sorts of tests from the patients and process them and see how many fungus there are in the lesions, and are proving that the medicine is really working. Many of the patients, their fungus has been going down, and some of them have got to zero, and we've been able to stop their medication. But this time with them came a surgeon to help operate. This disease grows like a bunch of grapes on somebody's ear, maybe on their nose or maybe on their face, and like large lumps on their arms or legs. So it helps when you take it off. It helps the medicine to be more effective. And during that last week before I came home, he was working with me on this. I didn't do all the surgeries with him, but I helped in many, and I organized all the attendants. And he did the legs, and I did the ears and the noses and these sort of things. I'm getting very good at carving. The people say I do barbecue and red wine as I burn these lesions off. But we did an average of 22 surgeries a day in our outpatient clinic there. So I wasn't altogether idle in these past weeks that I've been in Brazil. 27 years ago, I did a trip into the interior of the Acre State from the town that I live in. It was a terrible journey, because the first day, it was a seven-hour trip to get through the mud road to a little town on the borders of Bolivia. And there you'd stay in a hotel that had a terrible smelly bathroom, and the mattress on the bed in the room was about this thickness. And then the next day I had another 6-7 hours journey to get out to tend the patients. Sometimes you were on your knees in front of the pickup trying to get the mud, dig the mud out so that we could get through. But I went, one of the patients that I tended was a young married man with infectious leprosy, José Silvestre. Later, his wife would need treatment as well. And I went back many times to attend that family. Finally, I was able to say, you're cured. He has no deformity. His wife has no deformity. Everything is fine. You don't need the medication anymore. You're no longer infectious. And that meant that when his children were growing up, their father no longer had a disease. If I hadn't been there, if you hadn't prayed for me, if you hadn't supported me, if you hadn't been behind me, if I had been disobedient to the heavenly vision that God gave me, maybe that man would never have got treatment, become deformed, passed the disease on to his children. Maybe they today would have been deformed, sitting in a wheelchair with no fingers or an arm or a leg amputated. But he was cured way back those years ago. I was in São Paulo, in the big city of São Paulo, biggest city, I think, today in Latin America. And I was in the biggest heart hospital in South America, where I was having my tests done for my lung. And I was walking down the corridor of the hospital one day, and there were some doctors sitting there taking coffee. And I saw them looking at me. Now, it was cold, so I had a cardigan on. And I stopped and I looked to see, is it inside out or is it back to front? What's wrong with me? What's the matter with me? And then one of them got up and he called me. He said, Guilherme, come here. And I realized then I knew him. He was from Rio Branco, the town that I live in, a young doctor. And I went over and said, oh, I'm glad to see you. He said, yes, I'm here studying to be a heart specialist. And he introduced me to another man from the Acre who's also there taking his residency course. And then he introduced me to the third one. And that third young man said, well, I've finished my residency. I'm now a heart specialist. And in January of 2009, I'm going back to Rio Branco to start working there in the hospitals there. He said, you know my father? I said, do I? Yes. José Silvestre. That leprosy patient that I treated 27 years ago. And I looked at that lovely, young, talented heart specialist. And I thought, how glad I am that I was there to treat his father, prevent his father becoming deformed, prevent the father passing the disease on to his family. So I thank you for your prayers. It's part of the work that you're involved in. And I'm grateful that the Lord has given us opportunity to further the gospel in many ways. Now I want to refer you for a moment or two to the passage that we read together and that Dr. Paisley read on Sunday night. I thought, I wonder if he'd been listening to the same preacher as I have and reading the same books as I have, but I think we were on different lines. So I'm all right. A strange thing happened in the south of Brazil, in the southern state of Paraná. Some of the folks were out there in Paraná, I believe, because Iguazu Falls is in the state of Paraná. But on the coast, inland from the coast, the news media, the television, reported all over Brazil, it's raining fish in Paraná. And fish were actually falling out of the sky. It wasn't an airplane that was passing over and threw them out. It wasn't a tall building that threw them out. But it was actually raining fish. I'll explain in a moment. On the 31st of January 1953, Captain James Ferguson took the helm of a boat at 7:45 in the morning, a boat that had been condemned as unseaworthy and almost gone down twice on two occasions, condemned as unseaworthy in heavy seas. And in spite of warnings of storms and gale force winds and of gales, he sailed down Loch, what is the name of the Loch? Loch Ryan? And out into the open sea in the hope that he'd get the Princess Victoria across to Larne Harbour. But the sea was tossed with 20 feet waves. And there was a terrible storm that day. And he realized soon the mistake. And he tried to turn the boat round and get back into Loch Ryan. But that only made it worse because that put the 5-foot doors of the carport at the back right in the line of the 20-foot waves. And soon the ship was filling with water and the doors were burst open. He tried to back in, but he couldn't get reversed enough to go into the harbour again. And the Princess Victoria was carried for some hours in that terrible, terrible storm down those seas. The radio officer, David Broadfoot, even as the waters were coming up around him and the ship was sinking, he sat at his desk sending out messages for help. But unfortunately, he had been given the wrong position. And the ships that set out to look for the Princess Victoria were looking at the coast of Scotland, but she was really down off the coast of Ireland. It was the Donaghadee lifeboat that rescued some 44 people that survived. 135 were lost. Have you ever been in a storm at sea? If you've never been in a storm at sea, you never want to be in a storm at sea. My first experience of rough seas when I left for Brazil on the Hubert, it was a large passenger ship. And when we got into the Bay of Biscay, it wasn't really a storm, but it was stormy weather and there were waves and the ship rolled. And so many people were sick, almost everybody was sick. I remember staggering out onto the deck one day and looking around. I thought, somebody called Hui must have fallen into the sea. Because they were all hanging over the rail shouting, Hui, Hui, Hui. And they were looking for him. But a storm at sea in January of 1965, I was returning to Brazil and I left Hamburg on a small cargo boat, the Ruhrstein. It only took 3 passengers, myself and 2 German priests. It would take 15 days to cross the Atlantic Ocean. And some days into the Atlantic, the storm came. And what a storm. We were 3 days and 3 nights without food. They couldn't cook anything. They couldn't prepare anything. They brought us apples and bananas and things like that. But I remember staggering up off out of my bunk because you couldn't stand hardly. And I held on tight there and I looked out the porthole. My cabin looked right out onto the brow of the boat. And I would see those tremendous waves coming right over and covering the boat, covering the front of the boat. And the bow of the boat would go down and down and down. And I think, it's going down. It'll never come up again. And then as the bow went down, the back seemed to come out of the water and the propellers vibrated and the whole thing shook and vibrated. And I thought, we're going to break in pieces. And then it was worse when the waves caught the boat sideways and it turned it over. And I thought, we're going to go down and turn over. It'll never straighten up again. It was a terrible experience. I never crossed the Atlantic again on a boat. Now, Paul was in a terrible storm. They were 14 days. They saw neither land or light or stars or sky or sun. They were in darkness for 14 days, tossed about with a boat. We read that they threw out the rear anchor. And that was really like a parachute at the back that you've seen on spaceships when they're landing to slow the boat down. It says they girded the boat about. That meant they threw out ropes and they maneuvered the ship as best they could until they got the ropes on the other side, and they pulled them up and they tied them together to keep it from breaking up. And they threw out the tackle and they threw out everything, and still they were in this terrible storm. It was no fault of Paul's. He warned them before they left. But the captain of the boat knew that food supplies were low in Rome. And if he got there with a ship full of food, then he got a special bonus from Caesar's government. The centurion wanted to get there because he'd been away from home for so long. And he was very keen to get back again. And they set out against the warnings of Paul. Now, you've maybe been in a storm at sea, maybe not. But you know, there's storms that come into all our lives. There's storms, they might not be waves that roll over a ship, but maybe a diagnosis from a doctor. Maybe when the boss calls you into his office and you know it's bad news and financial difficulties are coming. Maybe it's a loved one that's walked away from the things of the Lord. There are many things that bring storms into your lives. And what do you do when you're in a storm? Like me on that boat, I thought we're going down, we'll never come up. There's the storms and the things that buffet us about in our lives. They take us down, do we not come up again? Do we go to pieces? Do we break up? Are we bowled over and never straighten up again? Now, what did Paul do in the midst of the storm? Well, we read that first of all, he recalled that God gave him a promise saying that he must be at Rome. And when the difficulties and the storms and the turmoils take place in our lives, the first thing we must do is lean on God's promises. Dr. Paisley mentioned this on Sunday evening. He said, get a promise from God. Mark it in your Bible. Remember it. Read it every day. Think on it. This is the promise that God gave me in this storm. Ask God to give you the promise. But don't do like Bill Pethybridge, who was a WEC missionary. He was going in for major surgery. The morning of the surgery, he said, Lord, give me a promise today that I'll come through this surgery. And he opened his Bible and put his finger, and he looked at what he put his finger on. This is a promise, Lord. And it said, blessed are the dead that die in the Lord. No, ask God to give a promise. And there are moments when God speaks to us in a very special way, aren't there? And gives us that promise and says, fear not. A story that I've told many times here, told it before. When I was going back to Brazil in 1965, a friend gave me some tapes on lecture notes on the Book of Romans by Pastor Mullen. I got away into a little village in the heart of the Amazon Valley there that I lived in. My tape recorder didn't work and I never listened to those tapes. But I gave them to an American missionary who was passing through, and he took them with him. And some weeks later, I joined him at the side of the Isuan River there where he lived with his wife. The next day, we would go on a 3-day trip into the jungle to try and make contact with the very hostile Juma Indians. And Arnie said that night, before we go, once a week, he said, my wife and I listened to a chapter in the Book of Romans, and it's such a blessing. It wasn't a tape machine in those days, it was a spool. And the spool was still on from when the previous week. And we prayed. We had a time of prayer. The Juma Indians had killed anyone who ever went into their villages. They'd killed anyone who ever they'd met on the jungle trails going into the villages. And we prayed for our journey for the next 3 days. And then they said, well, start now. It's Romans chapter 5 tonight. He's going to start. He's finished chapter 4 last week. And we turned on the tape. And Mr. Mullen said, my text today is 1 Kings 17 and 23. And he went unto David in the wood and strengthened his hand in God and said unto him, fear not, for the spear of Saul, my father, shall not find thee. And you'd have thought Mr. Mullen had heard our prayers, and he knew all about the Juma Indians when he spoke of David hiding in the forest and the danger that he was in from those spears. And he said, God is saying tonight, fear not. And he reminded us that there are 366 fear nots in the Bible, one for every day, and even one for leap year. About 5:30 the next morning, we set out. We walked all day through pouring rain. We swam where the jungle was flooded. We got away out there to the first of the Indian villages where we'd hoped to spend the night, but it was burnt to the ground. Even though it was raining, it was still smoldering, so it was obvious it had been burnt that day. We walked a little further down the trail to the next village. We'd have to go on and be another hour's walk through the forest. And as we walked, there were signs cut in the trees. There were pits across the path that were dug deep, poisoned arrows in the bottom, covered over with fine twigs. But we had an Indian woman from another tribe, and her son, she couldn't speak very much Portuguese. The little boy spoke a little bit. Indeed, Ted looked at the marks on the trees, and she spoke to her son in their language, and in his broken Portuguese, it said, the Indians will kill anybody who passes these marks. The pits were there, but she discovered them. My colleague turned to me and said, you go back. There's two woodsmen. You take one of the woodsmen, and he'll take you back to the edge of the river, and I'll go on. I said, why would I go back? Didn't God say, fear not? Wasn't that the promise that God gave us last night? Don't be afraid, fear not. And we did go on. We found an empty village. We spent the night there. We went on into the villages the next day and left presents and then started back again. The Indians would finally kill that Indian woman when we made contact with them. And they tried to kill her little boy, but he escaped. I was there some time later on the very first day when we actually met the Indians for the first time in their village. And then I moved away, but that missionary continued there. He learned enough of their language and eventually went to live. And the Indians could not understand why we didn't turn back that day. They were waiting with their bows and arrows, and when we had turned our back, they were waiting the flashes in the back. But because we kept going forward, they kept going further into the forest and further along. A special promise from the Lord. He says, fear not. And then, not only that, but Paul recognized the presence of the Lord. The Lord stood by him. They stood by me this night, an angel of God. He not only relied on the promise of God, but he relied on the presence of the Lord. But you know, there are days when things go wrong, and there are sorrows in our lives and troubles in our lives, and we don't really feel the presence of the Lord. But he's promised never, never to leave us. Tommy was telling me the other day about a preacher in England. I can't remember his name.
Whitmore.
And he was having a gospel campaign. He pitched his tent in a field. And the farmer that let the field to him, his wife came to the Lord. And that changed his whole home life. Because the wife would no longer be going out to parties and drinking and all this sort of thing. And the farmer got very angry. But the mission went on. And then finally closed. Sometime later, that preacher went back again. That preacher called Whitman. And he met the farmer. The farmer said, you know, I want to tell you something. You had your mission last year in my field. And you walked every night from your digs down to the tent. And he said, I was waiting in the field with a gun ready to shoot you. Because my wife got saved, my life was, home life was changed. But every time I got you in line, the other man stepped in front of you. And I couldn't shoot because I was going to shoot him and not you. And then I run around and I went down to another position and I waited again. And just as you came into view and I lined the gun up, that other man stepped in front of you. And I did that every night while the mission lasted. But I couldn't shoot you because the other man was there walking beside you. And the preacher scratched his head, but he said, I remember very distinctly every night I walked alone. I was on my own. Oh, he didn't realize, but the Lord was with him, and the Lord promises, I'll never leave you nor forsake me. But I think not only of the presence of the Lord and the promise of the Lord, but the purpose of the Lord. Now, I have read this through and through again. I've looked at commentaries and I've tried to discover why the shipwreck, why the storm took place. And if you know the answer, you tell me, because I can't understand it. I cannot find out why. Now, God had a purpose, but I don't know why. Why did they lose all their possessions? Paul lost everything. Everything. The first thing you do when your ship's going down is take off your shoes. And whatever clothes you can take them off as well to make yourself light for falling in the water. I've done that several times in the rivers of the Amazon. Before we jumped into the river, you took off your shoes and you pulled off your trousers and you took off your shirt. And I'm sure Paul was on that island with very little possessions, his manuscripts, his books, his clothing, whatever possessions he had, they were all lost. But why? I don't read of a church being formed on that island. I don't read of Paul even preaching the gospel in that island. I don't even read of people being saved in that island. Some people were healed. But why did that take place? Well, there are problems and storms in our lives and things that sweep across our pathway, and we will never understand the reason why. Sometime one of our churches in Rio Branco there got into trouble because the deeds hadn't been changed over and the church was up for auction. It was a gift from this church again that saved that. And I now went back there this year, and I discovered they still had some debt, just a little bit of debt. But again, a gift was able to help and clear that debt so that they were able then to start thinking about calling a pastor and taking care of the church in a debt-free way. But one of the deacons of that church was a very fine Christian man. Sir Lee was about 40 years, maybe 42 years of age. His wife was a great help in the children's work in the schools and in the church. One day Lee went to see his doctor, and there was a mistake made in the diagnosis. He said, "You've got a little bit of inflammation, take this medicine." When eventually it was discovered that he had a strangulated hernia and it had perforated and he was taken to surgery, it was too late. And after some days intensive care, he was taken from us and went to be with the Lord. Now, when at the end of the day, Donna Maria is sitting in the home on her own and she looks at the empty chair and she misses her husband's care and love. She places his hand on the teenage children, thinks how he's missed in the church. We can't understand why. Don't go and tell her this is because you're going to be a blessing to somebody. When you're in trouble, when you're in sorrow, when you're in the storms, you don't want to be a blessing. You want to get out of the storm. You want to get peace. You want to get comfort. And some people very wittingly say this is all happening to you because you're going to be a blessing. We do not know the reason why. I am not skilled to understand what God has willed, what God has planned. I remember a day in 1960. I was on my knees in a farmhouse in Northampton, and I was reading the words, "Hezekiah spread the letter before the Lord." And Mrs. Steele knocked at the door and she said, "There's a letter's come for you." I said, "Lord, I don't know what it is. I don't know who it's from and what it's about, but I know I'll bring it and bring it before you." The letter, of course, was to tell me that my engagement has ended, and that was the end of that. I couldn't understand. I don't understand. But after many years, I look back and I say, they meant it for evil, but God meant it for good to save much people alive. And so there are many experiences in our lives that we'll never understand. Oh, yes, we know we have the promises of God. We know He's promised to be with us. But some days it's difficult to understand why God brings these problems into our lives. And then I want you to think just at the end here of the protection, because God told Paul He would save him and all those that were with him. There were 270. And just a question to finish with. What did the angel say to Paul? And why did he say that to Paul? What did the angel say to Paul? And why did he say that to Paul? As I worked in Northampton for some time before I went out to Brazil, near the Cabra Church in those days and the Richarton churches, we had gospel missions up there. And then on a Saturday, it was our free day, I'd come into Belfast to visit my family. And maybe I'd been up for a weekend to preach in the Coleraine Church that was just starting on the Cabra Church. When you come off the railway station in York Street, off the train in York Street, the first stop is always a little shop beside the railway station where it was run, a baby shop, sold baby's clothes. And it was run by Margaret and Annie Munn. And they run that little shop to support their missionary family and missionaries across the world. They had a sixpenny a week club. Every Friday night, Margaret and Annie would be up and down the shore road with their book in their hand and knock at the door and said, "Missus, your husband got us pay from the yard today and I need my sixpence. And that's, you have another 10 weeks to go and you can start another club." And they supported missionaries all over the world. But if Annie was in the shop, you always got a laugh. And so you always went in on the hope that she'd be there because you're feeling down. Annie just had that way of telling things and making you laugh. Just before I went to Brazil, she told me a story. She said, "No, one day there was a missionary walking through the forest, and he came face to face with a lion. And he didn't have a gun, he had nothing, he only had his Bible, so the only thing he could do was fall on his knees and pray. And as he prayed there, waiting on the lion to jump, nothing happened. And slowly he opened his eyes, and he looked, and he couldn't believe it. The lion had its head bowed and its lips were moving. And he said, "Well, this is a miracle. The lion's praying." And they said, "Don't be stupid," he said. "I'm just saying grace before I have my dinner." Well, in Brazil, we don't have lions. But the spotted leopard is the same size as a fully grown lion is. And I've known many people who have been pulled apart by those spotted leopards. I was traveling with that American missionary on the river Isawam. It was a terrible journey. Our canoe was leaking, so every half hour we had to stop to take the water out. At night we always looked for somewhere to spend the night and put our hammocks up. And one night we came to the house about 5:30. It was getting dark already. And it was really, really, really very high up. The bank of the river was very, very high. Make Bellevue look very small. And we took up what we could carry and what we needed. The house was just in an L shape. It had been abandoned. There was nobody there. And we put our hammock in as far in as we could go. And we opened a tin of bully beef and mixed it up with dry farina mandioc flour. And we had our supper. And we got ready to get into the hammocks and have some sleep. And my colleague said, "Why is this house abandoned?" I said, "I know why it was abandoned. I knew the people that lived here. He was a rubber cutter, and he went out one day to cut the rubber, and he didn't come back, so his wife in the afternoon went down the trail, not very far away from the house. She found what was left of his body. He'd been pulled apart by a leopard. The leopard's very choosy, because the first thing it does is open the body and take out the heart, and then it takes the liver and other internal organs. And of course the wife fled, and nobody ever went back to live there." I said, "By the way, did you bring the gun up from the canoe?" He said, "No, still in the canoe." I said, "Well, come on with me and we'll go down and get it, because I'm not going down in the dark on my own. Our torches had very little light in them." He said, "Well, I'm not going down." He said, "Let's pray." And we started to pray. And he was praying away, and then all of a sudden he stopped praying, very abruptly. And he turned and he said, "Have you got malaria?" I said, "No." He said, "If you haven't got malaria, why are you shaking?" I said, "I'm shaking because of that leopard still prowling around there. All we have to defend ourselves is two spoons and a tin opener. And my hammock's right at the edge. And my mosquito net's transparent and it'll see me first." And I was afraid. Now what did the angel say to Paul? He said, "Don't be afraid, Paul." But Paul was the one that would write, "All things work together for good." Paul was the one that would write and say, "And the peace of God shall keep your hearts and minds." Paul was the great missionary, the great preacher, the great evangelist, the great writer, the great man of God. And yet the angel said, "Paul, don't be afraid." Why did he say, "Don't be afraid"? He didn't say, "Paul, you're singing Heavenly Sunshine." He didn't say, "Paul, you're singing It's Well With My Soul. It hasn't even been written yet, Paul." No, he said, "Paul, stop being afraid." Paul was scared stiff that night. He knew they'd lost all hope of saving the ship. They'd lost all hope. They were going down. He knew they were lost in that terrible storm. And if a great man like Paul could be afraid when trouble came into his life, how much poor little me and poor little you when the troubles and the storms of life are raging. Oh yes, it's all right to fear.
It's all right when we're worried about the results of tests. It's all right when we're afraid we'll never come up after the sorrows have knocked us down. In that southern state of Paraná, a terrible hurricane came sweeping in from the sea. And in the middle of the hurricane, there was a tornado. Now, you've seen that on the television. It flies round in circles and at many hundreds of miles, sometimes an hour, and it'll pick up a 10-ton lorry and throw it miles away, and it'll pick up a complete house and wreck it and throw it miles away. And as that hurricane came sweeping in from the sea, it sort of swept down, and the tornado went down into the sea. And as it churned the sea up and round in circles, it picked up those fish. And then it moved inland. And then after a while, it began to lose force, and the fish began to fall out of the sky. That was the reason they fell from the sky. The hurricane had carried them out there. The tornado had carried them out there. And a similar hurricane swept across the southern state of the United States of Florida. It was called Jean. It caused terrible damage. There was a tornado in the middle of it. It churned up the sea. It churned up the sand. It wrecked everything in front of it. It went right across the state, and then it came back across the state and out the sea again. And then it came in again, and it went across the state a second time as it pulled the sea and moved the sand in all directions. When it was all over, a man by the name of John Ruth was walking along the beach where he had been reared. He hardly recognized it anymore because everything had been moved and destroyed, and there was so much damage caused by that storm. But he looked at down at his foot, and there was something glittering, and he bent down. It was a silver coin. He didn't know what it was, but he looked. There was another and another. And altogether, he picked up 108. He didn't know what they were, silver coins. So he took them to a silversmith. The silversmith looked at them and looked at him in amazement. I said, "Have you just come back from the dead? Where have you come from?" He said, "Why? What are these silver coins?" He said, "They're Spanish pieces of eight." He held one up. He said, "It's worth $40,000. You've just become a millionaire." John Ruth went to the books and went to study, and he discovered this was in 2008, this happened. He discovered in 1750 there had been a terrible battle just off that beach when several Spanish pirate ships had been sunk with all their treasures, had been buried at the bottom of the sea. You're buried deep in the sand. And the hurricane came, and the storm came, and the tornado came. And after centuries, after many long time, it threw that priceless treasure at that man's feet. Oh, the storms. If you're not in a storm, you're coming out of one. If you've never been in a storm, it's coming, so get ready. The storms come into our lives, and the sorrows come into our lives, and the problems come into our lives, and the sickness comes into our lives. We maybe never see the answer to our prayers. We maybe never understand. But one day that very storm that we're going through will cast a priceless treasure at someone's feet. "Ye fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds ye so much dread are rich with mercies and will break in blessings on your head." Thank you.
To thank our brother Bill for bringing that word to us. I don't know about you, but I could sit and listen to him all night. All the experiences that he has gone through and how the Lord has undertook for him and how he's believed on the promises of God. I was just reading before I came out tonight that great promise, "Lo, I am with you always, even until the end of the world."